So we start after a break with a very wonderful bonane. I think the very first sharing should be a look behind and a look ahead. And when we look behind, of course, we see a string of events, both nearer to us and in the world, which are two sides of one truth. The world, or rather Mother Nature, brings back all that happens in the world at the feet of the Divine Mother, so that it could be transmuted. And all that happens here spreads out in waves all across the world. And that is the beauty of this marvelous creation, which we call as the ashram, creation of the Divine Mother. One of the events that took place very locally was, it caught my eye suddenly. It was a strange picture. How partial truths and deeper truths could be there. So in the picture there was a boy jumping the barricade, trying to jump the barricade, and came out in the newspaper in a big way. Obviously it was offshoot of the dharna, and there was a boy trying to jump the barricade. And the way it was projected was that here is a boy, he is so much agitated that he is wanting to jump across and register his protest. But suddenly, before my eyes, something else flashed forth. So I thought I would start sharing with that. I saw something very obscure and dark rushing towards light, to surrender, to be changed, to be transformed. And I didn't know whether to feel amused or to feel sad at the whole thing, because ultimately the Divine takes everything, calls everything up to Himself, and He is so full of compassion, grace, boundless love, that everything He touches gets transformed, goes back into the world with a changed substance, changed energy. That is the action of the Divine. And the other thing that happened in the world was suddenly a cry for unity. We know, just a few days back there was a massive show in Paris following the assassination of, killing of, rather the murder of Charlie, who was a cartoonist. And we know that France, just as each country represents its own dharma, India has approached truth in a religious way, in a psychic way, and an intuitive way. France has approached it in a more rational and more secular way, but it's also an approach to truth. So freedom, unity, brotherhood, equality, these are things inbuilt in the very soul of France, and it bounces back. It's one approach to truth, very valid approach, and no wonder the coming together of France and India represents these two approaches, which climb towards one reality. And so following the murder of Charlie, there was this massive show. I think lakhs of people came together at one place. They gathered, and it was a kind of cry for unity. This too reminded me of an event which is going to take place. We have entered this year into the 50th year when, for the first time, Auroville was declared by the mother. Actually, she had dreamt of Auroville while in France as a child. And when she came, she left the formation there. She knew the world is not ready, a whole country which is dedicated to the Divine. So she left the formation there. And at one point in 1947 or 48, she wanted again to form Auroville. And that time in Hyderabad, some land was there. And see how detached the mother was at one level. She had decided that on the hill, there will be a place for both mother and Sri Aurobindo. And then she says, it was subject to his going there. All this the Divine Mother had thought about. And there was a stream running below, and everything was finalized, except that last, there was just one small little problem. And the problem was that that time Hyderabad had not yet ceded to India. And so they said that, well, everything we can provide, but whatever is produced here will remain here. So the whole thing fizzled out. Then again this dream came back. Several times mother talks about it, and we'll read through as we proceed. But eventually, Roger aspired that he wants to build something which is unique and different. And the mother said, if you want it, I have something with me. And he said, let me come back. He went to Paris and he caught hold of that formation of the mother. And he said, I am writing under great inspiration. And mother says, it was all my formation which was there, and he just caught it, and Auroville began to take shape. But the mother declared it for the first time openly, at least in the written documents, and that's why many people are regarding it as the 50th year of Auroville's conception. It's not really conception, but the mother declared to the disciple, and it comes, have you heard about Auroville? And that's when she talks about a dream of Auroville, 1965. So this is, we are entering the 50th year. So it is very interesting that just Auroville is meant to represent the ideal of human unity, that just as we enter it, there is a sudden outburst, a cry for unity, precipitated by a most strange event. And that event, to an outer eye, is obviously, I mean, it's something evil, something which shouldn't happen. And followed by that event, there is a cry for unity. And it reminded me of what Shurbindo wrote to Mrilani Devi long back, and also what he writes in the problem of rebirth when he talks about the karmic law. He says, it is a law of the world. He talks about it as a law that often good comes out of evil and evil out of good. It's very interesting because actually the two are so intricately intertwined. And of course, to our eye, they are evil, and good to the divine eye, it's something very different. So when we look back at a few months, maybe a couple of years. But there is another kind of looking back. And when we look back much further, then we discover the roots of problems. And we can look back right to the origin. Because then we discover the real root. Because all problems started with the origin. If there was no creation, there was no problem. But obviously, it was a problem which, after its resolution, will give rise to something much more than what it was before creation. That's how Shurbindo puts it. Otherwise, creation will have no sense. And at the very origin, the first impulse as creation came out, it's very, normally we think of divine action as something linear, but it's always a circular motion. And we have a constant whirling at the center, things which are moving at a tremendous speed. Even physically, one can visualize it. And two forces begin to act upon every particle that is thrown out. The one force, the primary force, is a centripetal force. Everything gets drawn towards the source. We cannot help it. This is the original impulse. So it applies psychologically, it applies physically, it applies occultly, it applies spiritually. That everything will get drawn towards its force. Even at the material level, this is true. The other is the centrifugal force. But in reality, as scientists would tell us, there is no centrifugal force. It is the resistance or the inertia. Because other particles are not able to move at that tremendous speed, they begin to fall out and seem to go further and further away. And this movement one sees so clearly here, closer to the source of light and truth. And one sees it everywhere in the world, that there are things which are not able to keep pace, and they begin to fall out, they begin to go further and further. And there are things which in some way are held to the center, and so they keep moving, and as they move, they change. So I thought we could read something about that. And today being Nalini Das's birthday, we could start with one of Nalini Das's writings and then something of the mother. Nalini Das's writing takes a look behind, and it's must be somewhere in the late 70s. The date I do not know, but so contemporary when we read it. And the title is A Review of the Ashram Life. And what he writes in 70s, late 70s, looks like he was writing yesterday. That's the beauty of his writing. So he says, in its early days, quite at the beginning, we may now say long, long ago, for it is now almost half a century ago, so 76, 77, around that. The ashram, from its very start and quite spontaneously and inevitably, grew into a community life. That is to say, The individual ceased to have any personal possessions. Whatever they had belonged not to themselves, but to the group. Rather, to the master of the group, the guru, to the mother and Sri Aurobindo. So this is how it started. And for a long time, the mother kept the life like that. She just held everybody together in a, wrapped everyone in a cocoon individually as well as collectively. And she created a creation of a higher kind. Because she could do it, she could pour in all the higher forces in an individual, even in an unwilling mold. And she had done it. Literally, that was the time when all the gods began to descend into, we know it is normally called as the golden period of the ashram life, but it was just a little short of the golden. And that's why it had to come down. And then she creates that. All the gods are beginning to manifest in mortals who are here, uplifted so close. And a humanity which began to become completely isolated from everything else. It was a very strict rule those days, as the mother herself would reveal. For instance, one rule was nothing to do with family life at all. Even when the families came, they were living as individual units. They were not like a family. And when it was all created, she goes to Sri Aurobindo and here is it. I have done what thou hast wanted me to do. And Sri Aurobindo says, no, this will not suffice. It will create a great religion. And you will be worshipped worldwide. But this is not what we want. We want a perfect perfection. Sri Aurobindo doesn't say that. But Jagat Janani understands. And then Nalinidas says something very interesting. He puts it very beautifully. So that was the time of joyous surrender. The life of each one was directly linked with the mother. The relation between the individuals was founded on the relation each one had with the mother. It did not depend on one's liking or disliking, one's attraction or repulsion, but it was as necessitated by the need of the life as arranged by the mother. So everything was directly under her control. This is how the divine creation is there in the higher worlds. Such a life was possible because of two reasons. One is, of course, the physical reason. Number of disciples were very small. And the mother speaks about it, that till you were 50, 100, 150, even 200, I could do the sadhana in each one. And then the number began to increase and it was not possible to do that kind of thing. She was literally doing sadhana in everyone. Nobody had, like it was, it's unimaginable. And the other is a psychological reason. And then there were no children. And of men, only those who were allowed who had a real call for the spiritual life. So this was the psychological reason. Those alone who were chosen by the mother and Sri Aurobindo and permitted to live here. So the psychological reason was it was a select group. Only those who had a calling for the spiritual life. There were no other motives. Because there was no other possibility. So there were no other motives, school, children, I think categories like volunteer, offering, this was not there. It was just one was accepted or not accepted. So this is how it was formed. So it was a select group who already had an inner life and spiritual aspirations. So they were ready for a life of surrender and self-giving, obedience and allegiance to the Guru. So it was as simple as that. Number was small and it was a select group. So those who came, they were already tuned that we are going there, we have to surrender to the master and his complete guidance. There is no question of exercising one's freedom and individuality. It was understood. The work that mother could do then and was doing, she has herself described and explained to us, it was the creation of a world, a region at least of the higher consciousness, in which everyone who participated had his own place, everyone with his soul being sufficiently in front. And this being she could connect or link up with the being of the higher sphere. So the descent of the gods took place. And then she goes to Sri Aurobindo. And Sri Aurobindo made an observation which meant halt. And then Nalinidas describes it very, very beautifully. Very powerfully. When Sri Aurobindo says halt, he says the whole thing dropped from mother's hands. It's such a visual description. Mother has described it much more in a very sophisticated way. She says, I cleaned it all. It all vanished. I removed it. And he says it dropped from mother's hands. The new creation vanished in a moment, as it were. There was a pralaya. The gods withdrew. We came down with a thud upon earth. Down to earth. Earth to earth. And then he says something very interesting. We are still there, crawling forward, I hope, as best as we can. This is coming from Nalanda in the 70s. Then he gives us a very interesting reason. This creation of a luminous world in a higher sphere of the mind, which mother attempted, could not be fully achieved, for the foundations were not properly laid. The basic ground was not prepared. It was there in the higher regions of the mind. The vital and the physical, it was superimposed on that. One is reminded of yogis who live for 200 years, 300 years. And very often people think that, you know, it's supramentalization or immortality. No, it's by the superimposition of a higher consciousness. And the vital and physical have no choice but to obey that tremendous compulsion. It just listens to that. And by the very power of that superimposition, it continues but doesn't change. So it has no impact on the world at large, no impact on the life outside, but definitely it can create a Shangri-La. Now Shangri-La is wonderful for those who live within Shangri-La. But as we know in the story, the moment one of them tries to step out, there is disintegration. The new creation left out of account these realities of basement. So one had to come down, forgetting for the moment the higher realization, into these darker regions and make a thorough cleaning of them. One had to face the stark realities there and master them before one could think of a heavenly ascent. So we all became once more ordinary human beings with human weaknesses and a modicum of aspiration perhaps. The scene changed completely. A midsummer night's dream turned into a somber Hamlet tragedy. This is how he puts it. And then the first sign of this change was assertion of the individual's freedom. Because right then, the law was surrender. Individual freedom was not the law. What the mother in Shrivindu said, the disciple understood. He knew he had to obey. Even if he felt grudgingly, grumblingly, he wrote to mother in Shrivindu and they replied to him. Sometime it would be a one-line reply. As we know, when somebody asked for timepiece, and Shubindu replied, how about timeless peace? And that's the end of the matter. No question of arguing that you have given a big watch to somebody, why not to me? Or we know how Rishabh Chandji, how he wrote to mother that I am so happy, give me whatever work you give. And he was given the work of killing the bugs inside a cot in a very crude way, putting hot water, they will come out, then you have to, you know, finish them. And he's a Jain, how could he ever do it? Now these are mental ideas. So he writes to Shurbindo, mother does not know that I am a Jain. And Shurbindo writes one liner reply, whatever work the mother gives you is meant for your progress, do it in that spirit and all will be fine. End of the story. Or when somebody observed some music, of course that's much later in the playground, which was more like a French song. And a French song, when, you know, the ladies of the soldiers sang for the men who were going to war. It was a very touching song of human love. And some people felt this is not done and wrote to the mother. Mother said, why? It's a wonderful song. That was the end of the story. Nobody would after that question, how can you say that? What? But then the creation had to start on another basis. The problem with that is that what is not taken into account is that each unit has to ask and seek the change. And that's a very difficult task. So he says the first sign of this return to earth, this resumption of life as it is, was the reassertion of the individual, the freedom of the personal unit. Because of the increased number of people and because of the incursion of children, the earlier frame could no longer hold good. So she removed that frame. The willing surrender of individuality is a lesson that has to be acquired and achieved. It is not just God's gift for the many. So there are some who are prepared. For them it's fine. But many have to learn it. And it's a hard lesson. And therefore everything came rock bottom to the veil of tears. Like the Roman poet Facilis descends. Things descend very fast. The realization aimed at demands a wholesale change. Hence the darkness of it all. All the impurities, imperfections and vilenesses show themselves. The grassroots, as they say, that have to be extirpated and the ground ploughed and furrowed, prepared for the new seed. Individualism reared its gruesome head with all its inevitable consequences. So individualism, the sense of freedom, I am free, it's a big illusion. True freedom is a spiritual freedom, but mind doesn't understand it. Mind thinks the egoistic freedom is the freedom. I will do whatever I feel like. So what happened with that came egoism, the root of all evil. So along with that, there were inevitable consequences. Egoism had uncontrolled sway. Instead of submission and surrender and obedience, freedom attained complete freedom, liberty pushed to license. So this was the extreme other end, other pole. The freedom, the devolution or departure from the center control went so far as to bring about, as I say, almost a real separation between the two. The same tendency as we see notice in the play of the world today. So this is the same original problem. The problem of origin is that in the beginning we see the higher creation, the higher sphere. In that everything dances completely in tune with the divine. How it is able to do it? It is the dance of Krishna in Vrindavan with all the many beings, energies, forces beautifully described in Savitri in the house of the spirit and the new creation. Because everybody spontaneously submits to the law of Krishna, to the law of light, to the law of love. And therefore it is able to keep pace. But the characteristic of the lower hemisphere is that regardless of how the divine is dancing, each one wants to dance his own way. And that's not a very pleasant sight. It's a total rock and roll, and it becomes, I mean, rock and roll is a good form, not aspersions on that. But the point is that the dance becomes more and more chaotic, more and more turbulent. And there is some touch of rhythm in it, but because of that turbulence, it loses the original rhythm. And very soon, people realize that Krishna, who was dancing in the midst, has become Kali. Because it becomes the dance of Kali. And there is a terrible destruction. Because this too is a dance, wild dance. Wild dance is bound to invite Kali. Kali's dance is wild. That's why there is no rhythm anyone can bind in it. That's why she is beyond time. Because all rhythms are a certain measure. She breaks all rhythms. So this was the intermediate stage when the faults, the imperfection, the wrong forces that issued from and were inherent in the original ignorance and first separation had to be tracked and met. Could not be allowed to lie dormant eternally. Therefore they rose and declared themselves so that the light can deal with it and swallow it. So this is how these forces came into play, and so long, naturally this is from the origin of creation this problem has started. And the Divine Mother has taken to do this work thoroughly, and so she is tackling with it. So we are thus in a transition period. It is an interregnum. It is beset with great difficulties, but they are also great opportunities. The Calvary is not merely a passage of pain and suffering. It is a purgatory. That is to say, a period or a zone, a process where the being and consciousness is clearing itself, throwing off its own scales, shuffling its old skin, and in course of time it will come out in a rejuvenated body and in a harmonious setting. So the paradise lost will be a paradise regained. So which is better than the original paradise. So there is a paradise originally, and they know no sin, but there is no knowledge. It's a spontaneous action. So it is lost because of the evolutionary power. The mother gives the story of the serpent. It is not evil. It is the evolutionary energy which had bit. And so they have to go through a very complex cycle of evolution. At the end, it is paradise regained. Now the interesting part is, Mother says exactly the same thing, but of course, she is the Divine Mother. She will tell us in a much more simpler way so that we don't get disheartened. So she says the same thing in a different way. Somebody asked the mother, "Mother, previously things were very strict in the ashram, but not now. Why?" Very simple question. So mother says, "Yes, in the beginning it was very, very strict for a long time. But as I said, bit by bit things changed." And then she says that earlier there were 35, 36, 150 people and I could nestle them in a cocoon. But this had one advantage, the change from a very strictness to a kind of so-called looseness. There was one advantage. And what is that? We were too much outside of life. And it's so true that if the divine is there in all his splendor, many of these forces can't even come near. So he even veils himself. It's otherwise very difficult. I just remember seeing Champak Lalji, so luminous body in one of his, when he used to sit next to Shirbindu's room. And my question was later on, how does he travel? Does he go out? And I was told, yes, he comes out and he goes into the world. I said, how does he travel? But then I realized and I was told that no, when they come out, they veil themselves and things like that. And Shirbindu and the mother, how much they used to veil themselves in this body, which is the most obscure veil. And yet it was so difficult because in that, unless they allow, these forces cannot even come near. So she says, things changed, but it had one advantage. We were too much outside of life. So there were a number of problems which had never arisen, but which would have suddenly surged up the moment we wanted a complete manifestation. Because sooner or later, this yoga had to touch every sphere of life. So every sphere was obviously not there because it was not yet ready. So we took on all these problems a little prematurely, but it gave us the opportunity to solve them. In this way, we learned many things and surmounted many difficulties. Only, it complicated things considerably. So these are complications which the Divine has taken. Now, it is very interesting, the Mother uses the word, we learned many things. What does the Divine Mother learn? She learns the ways of darkness. She knows how human beings, what is crookedness, what is deception. Because this is something to the Divine, it's in that consciousness of purity and truth, it doesn't exist. Darkness doesn't exist where there is light. So it has to come down into many shades so that it little bit connects and understands. And she says that I am amazed how human beings think. They cannot think straight. And she says that even a straight thing gets twisted. Just a little twist and it's falsehood. And he says, I have seen even the faces change. And they come and tell me lie and they think I don't know. And mother says, I smile. So they think they are able to cheat me. And they go back. These are mother's words. She says, they come and tell me a lie and I just smile. Because she's looking at all the twists inside. And they go back thinking they are very smart, clever people. And they don't know that I can see everything. So this is how she learned the ways of the world. Just as we have to learn the ways of the divine, she learned it. And then she says that then children came and everything began to change. It became very, very different. So what is to be done then? What does she want us to do in this particular state in which we find ourselves? Now here again, there is a writing in 1969. It's very amazing. It looks like mother has written for all times to come, foreseeing. Because very often a question is that, okay, there was another phase in the collective life when the mother physically withdrew. Because obviously, there is no question of birth and death for her. But she withdrew behind the scene. So has she spoken anything about it? Yes, she has spoken about that also. And she prepared her children for that day. That's why we see that post 56, she first prays that, is there any necessity for me to be here? She asked the Supreme Lord. And then she says, well, if my physical presence can be of some help to others, I don't mind being here. And then she takes up the yoga of the cells and she withdraws slowly, completely. After 62, mother did not come down at all. So she was preparing everybody for the transition, because she knew that either way, either if she had to leave the body or if the body got transformed, humanity will not be able to touch or reach her immediately, because the gap will be so huge. It's a long way to be covered. So she reminds us of the core problem, because instead of tackling one problem, another problem, there are hundreds of problems, and you know, you correct one thing. It's like, you know, when you get an electrical equipment in the room, sometimes this bulb gets fused, that bulb gets fused. This is an advertisement which comes. It's a very partial truth. So in the advertisement, the lady says, oh my God, again this bulb has gone. So please get another one and change it. So the man says, don't change bulbs. You put now LEDs or what are those new NFL or something, CFL bulbs. And then he says, look, don't change bulbs, change your attitude, your mindset, your thinking. Now the other part which he could not see is that, you know, it is, if bulbs are frequently going in a house, there is some problem with the electrical connection. That also one has to see. It's not just about the bulbs. Why are they going so frequently? So instead of changing one bulb, changing another, this equipment, that equipment, one has to also see how is the wiring, what is the real problem. So Mother and Shobindu are reminding us of the core problem, that if you tackle it, other problems will get sorted out. And if you don't tackle it, problems will surface in one way or the other. You'll contain one, another will come, second one will go, third will come. And very conveniently we can keep saying hostile forces, darkness, this, that. But the problem will come, some door will remain open, individually and collectively. So she tells us, in human life, the cause of all difficulties, all discords, all moral sufferings is the presence in everyone of the ego, with its desires, its likes and dislikes. So she just write the part that hurts most, which we don't want to see. We want to see problem outside in somebody else, this, that. But in everyone, all discord, all quarrel, all problems come because of ego. Even in a disinterested work, which consists in helping others, until one has learned to overcome the ego and its demands, until one can force it to keep calm and quiet in one corner, the ego reacts to everything that displeases it, starts an inner storm, and spoils all the work. So this is the spoil spot which has been tagged on, like that virus bug. All the windows get contaminated. And then she says, this work of overcoming the ego is long, slow, and difficult. It demands constant alertness and sustained effort. This effort is easier for some and more difficult for others. We are here in the ashram to do this work together with the help of Sri Aurobindo's knowledge and force. In an attempt to realize a community that is more harmonious, more united, and consequently much more effective in life. Repeatedly, the mother said, if we are united, something can be done. But if we remain always quarreling, then nothing stable can be done. Some work will get done because divine is there. And then she says something very startling, as if she is talking today. As long as I was physically present among you all. So I kept looking again and again at this word was. It's strange. Mother is speaking as if in past tense. She was there even then, physically present. Physically she was present, though not actively participating. So she says, as long as I was physically present among you all, my presence was helping you to achieve this mastery over the ego. What we read in Nalini Das' article, essay, that everything was centered around the mother and her mere presence. Even now it happens. Two people will quarrel. And one day I was so amused. It's so amusing sometimes. You see some very interesting things. So right at the samadhi, on this side, there was people from one camp. On other side, somebody from another camp. And both were praying to the divine. And it reminded me of Krishna and Duryodhana and Arjuna. I said, my God, this is so true. And divine has to accept all the prayers. He cannot say, no, 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 I am on this camp. Because he is all. So he is quietly, and my mother's love that everybody feels going to her. So her presence is the central key. If we can find that, whatever happens, it will always remain. So she reminds that it was easy to achieve mastery over the ego as long as I was physically present. And so it was not necessary for me to speak to you about it individually very often. But now this effort must become the basis of each individual's existence. And then who will start? So she says, more especially for those of you who have a responsible position and have to take care of others. So she says that that's where it has to start. Recently I heard a very nice thing. When Mr. Modi was asked, what are you doing for corruption? He says, I'm starting from where it begins. I'm starting with my office. It was a brilliant statement made. I'm starting from where it all begins. Honest admission. He says, I'm starting cleaning up from my office. And you will see the results trickle down. So it has to start, you know, the response. Because that's the example. Nalnida even goes on to say that after a while, this assertion of individual freedom made even departments cut off from others. And at one of the places in Agenda, Mother says that each department has developed a kind of ego. It will not interact with another department and there'll be as if there is walls. He uses the word walls between departments and within departments. So, but it was a play, as Nalnida has said. So here she says, this is the thing which one has to work, and particularly in those who are given a responsible position. The leaders must always set the example. The leaders must always practice the virtues they demand from those who are in their care. At one place, both Mother and Shubhendu, they have said something very interesting. They said, there is some merit in taking on your boss, but what is, it is really ugly and smallness to fight with your subordinates. He says, what is there? I mean, anybody can fight. So this is not sign of nobility. So here she says that who should show the way? They must be understanding, patient, enduring, full of sympathy and warm and friendly goodwill. So this is what she expects from all of us. We may not be leaders, and that's not, but from all of us. But much more from the leaders, but from everyone in general, that they must be understanding, patient, enduring, full of sympathy and warm and friendly goodwill. Not out of egoism to win friends for themselves. So even there, human beings, the ego finds a mask. It wants to remain popular. So it will always, you know, say very goody-goody things, pleasant things to one person and very different things to another, because it wants to remain popular. So she says, not out of that egoism. That is another kind of warped egoism. But out of generosity, to be able to understand and help others. It's amazing when one sees letters of the mother, when she gives instructions with regard to the servants. How she goes on to say, to that extent, when servants went on a strike, she says, I take it that you are an extension, a part of myself, a part of our consciousness. It's so touching when one reads it. That you are not somebody outsiders, and therefore everything you may not realize, she says, that you may not realize what it means, but it means that you will also gain from it. Obviously she is saying all the inner gains. She says, you are part, I am carrying you inside me. I am not treating you as somebody who is a paid worker. So you have to decide and choose whether you want just the money or you want to remain as part of a family. And repeatedly she says, you know, that they have to be treated in this way, understanding way, generous way. Out of generosity, to be able to understand and help others. And then the final mantra, to forget oneself, one's own likings and preferences, is indispensable in order to be a true leader. That is what I am asking of you now, so that you can face your responsibilities as you should. So this is our prime responsibility, to conquer our own ego, not somebody else's ego. That I gave him good, that's not going to help. So we have to work upon ourselves. And then you will find that where you used to feel disorder and disunity, they have vanished. Such a simple remedy. And harmony, peace and joy have taken their place. So look at the marvelous words. They'll vanish. We don't have to struggle. We cannot struggle against one ego against another. If ego goes, the disorder goes. Disunity goes. And not only it goes in its place, harmony, peace and joy, they take their place. And then finally the mantra, you know that I love you and that I am always with you to sustain you, help you and show you the way. It's amazing, the background of this note, I do not know, I wish it was mentioned. It's amazing that she starts by saying that when I was physically present. So she says, as if she is talking today, that when I was physically present, things were like this, but now I expect you to overcome your ego. And then she says something very interesting, that though I am physically not present, yet my love, my consciousness, everything is there with you. And so we close with that. You know that I love you and that I am always with you to sustain you, help you and show you the way. So this last part is from Collected Works of the Mother, Volume 12, on education. And Nalini Das is, of course, Collected Works of Nalini Das. And the full write-up will be on the website. So those who want to read the full writing, it's on the website at thefeetofthemother.org. So these are agenda for the year, to overcome the ego.